your goal is to transfer that confidence to your client, but the poor old buyer is just there exposed in the street. What advice could you give them to give them a better chance of buying their dream home this weekend?
I think when you look at an auction and you look at a strategy, for example, that a buyer employs to try and buy that property, is that sometimes people strategize too much. At the end of the day, an auction could be turned on its head. If you have a strategy in play and somebody does something that doesn't fit in with your strategy, all is like, well, what am I going to do now? The reality is the person who has the biggest budget for the property should buy the property. But I am a firm believer that if I was bidding for somebody and they had a very similar budget to somebody else, that I really believe that I could put the best strategy in play to buy the property. I think one of the biggest mistakes that buyers make is they don't look at their competition. Their focus is on the auctioneer, and that's my intention is to get their focus. But I can tell so much by just looking at their body language. And the buyers can also tell so much from their competition if they actually just looked at them. And I'll give you an example. If I'm bidding against you, Bryce, and you're getting to the end of where you may have set your upper limit, and you might have a partner that you're talking to your partner, and I can see that you're getting to the end of your limit, you're starting to ask each other questions. And I can tell straight away, the questions that you're saying is, do you think we should go another 5,000? No, we've spoken about this. They've already gone into the auction with a preconceived idea of what they will pay. If I'm the other buyer and I can see that you're starting to weaken, my bidding strategy should become more aggressive. So if I see that you come back in for that last desperation, that desperate bid at the end, I'm going to come back in with just a $1,000 bid really quickly, and I'm going to tear your heart apart. Okay, that's as harsh as that might sound.
It's professional intimidation.
If you see weakness, you need to pounce on that. At the same time, bidding confidently is not always the best strategy. So a lot of people will say, you got to bid confidently and that's the way you got to bid. And this moment someone's bid, you got to bid straight away. Well, to a certain degree, I agree with that. And I'm an advocate of that. But that doesn't always win the auction. Sometimes if you've got lots of people who are bidding confidently, sometimes it's actually the right thing to do. Let them go. Let them bid confidently. Let them compete against each other. And then just wait. And if you're still in when they're starting to weaken, then you come in. And then it's like a dagger in their chest. It's like, where'd you come from?
Yeah.
So auctions are very strategic. I like getting involved. I like people knowing that I'm involved. I'm not a big fan of sitting back and waiting until they hear the auctioneer it's on the market. It's another big thing that Victorians love to say, that in Sydney, you'll very rarely hear an auctioneer say it's on the market. Whereas in Victoria, most people wait until they hear the auctioneer say it's on the market.
Or they'll be asking. Are we on the market yet? Yeah. Are we on the market yet?
So that's the number one reason why we don't say it's on the market, is because I don't want them to wait. I want them to get involved and bid.
So you've asked the question, how do you answer it?
Yes or no.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Again, transparency. Like, I don't want to beat around the bush. If you have the courage to ask me a question, is it on the market? I will tell you yes or no. If I'm very close to the reserve and I don't want to say no to you, then I will say, I'm just confirming that right now. And that is a strategy for me to be able to say, I acknowledge your question. The answer is probably going to be yes, but I'm legally not allowed to say yes at the moment. So that's key. That's key for me to get the agent to go, let's go and get this on the market. Or no, we're not. We're confident in the value in it. We're gonna back our judgment and we're gonna negotiate. However, if you don't bid, then you won't have the first crack at negotiating straight after.
Well, that's a good point. That's often a misunderstood point about what that actually means. So can, for the benefit of the listeners, it's passed into me, I'm under reserve, I walk in, you tell the reserve to me, what does that mean afterwards?
Okay, so in New South Wales, if the person who holds the highest bid at the auction, first of all, it's not a legal right. It is just a courtesy.
It's a misunderstood point, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. So in New South Wales, the courtesy is that you give the highest bidder the opportunity to pay the reserve price. Now, it's very unlikely that the highest bidder will pay the reserve, although I have had it happen a couple of times where we've been quite close to the reserve and then another buyer has walked in and tried to start negotiating and we've ended up selling it to the highest bidder. So, but it is a courtesy. You give them the first courtesy to negotiate around the reserve price and try and bring that deal together. We do have some clients who make it a, I guess they draw a line in the sand and they say, you know what, if you're the highest bidder, we will only negotiate with you after the auction. And I have had situations with those particular clients where a buyer has not bid at the auction and outsmarted themselves to a certain degree and missed out because they tried to negotiate after and the agent said, no, we told you we're only negotiating with the highest bidder. We're not negotiating with you. And I've actually had an owner stand up in a sit-down conversation with the highest bidder, stand up and say to this other buyer, get out. I'm not selling it to you. Purely on the basis of principle.
Okay. Well, I had an example in North Melbourne. I think I talked about this before. A young girl on the phone to her financial planner, I'm bidding on behalf of my client. Basically, the property's passed in to me and she hasn't realised that it's been passed in because she's trying to convey what's going on. And in Victoria, you do have the exclusive right. You do, so in other words, if we don't say no, if we haven't said no, then we want to go inside and we want to take our time. I'm going to go inside. I'm going to come back out, talk to my client. I want all this going because everyone's going, oh, it's been booked, but they move on.
Mm.
So and in this particular case, she wasn't willing to move on. She's going, no, I've still got the right. No, you don't. And so the auctioneer had to come back out and say, I can't talk to you. I can't, oh, but I wanted to pay more. And obviously the vendors are sitting inside hearing they want to pay more. I'm like, if you do this, guess what? We're off to, we're off to VCAT.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a bit of a problem on your hands here. So ultimately, we got the property at the price that we wanted to pay, but it was just messy, you know. But ultimately, that's our job as buyer's agents to make sure that we're working on behalf of our clients to get the best outcome. And so if we're intimidating other people, you know, in what I call the street theatre, because that's all it is, it's street theatre, you know, that's the way it should be.
And I've got to say, I stand at the front, I look directly at my opponent, and I don't deviate from that look. So I'm glad the best auctioneer in the business has confirmed my strategy.
I think I will say this, Bryce, there is a difference between being confident and being too aggressive or... what's the word?
Arrogant.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, totally. Also, like, really putting the other person off. I think you can do it respectfully.
Oh, yeah, totally. There's no serial killer look in my eyes.
There are a few out there who are like that. They are totally intimidation, almost bullying in their auction arrangement. I mean, some of the challenge for us, because obviously we buy all over Australia, is that we haven't met some of the auctioneers that we're actually working with. So where there might be, obviously, people who have watched how they're auctioned. So I always make it a point that I go and introduce myself to the auctioneer and I ask them a question. Are you a quick hammer thrower or do you absolutely let it go? And that's all I want to know.
Yeah.
And then the final thing I ask is just make sure you confirm with me before you throw the hammer down that I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in right at the death nail.
Yeah.
You make sure you come to me. And if I get that confidence that they're going to do that, then that's fine. I'll go off and I'll work my strategy.
Yep.
What about the classic person who turns up and their job is to tell you about the asbestos that's in the roof that they hope that the... how do you deal with that?
It's funny you say that. Yeah, I was actually doing an auction last week and it was an industrial property in a suburb called Smithfield. And we were conducting this auction and a guy actually said that to me. I called for a bid and he said, what about the roof? And I said, yeah, the roof's included as well. And he goes, no, the asbestos in the roof. And I just kept talking.
Yeah.
You know, I call them gherkins. When a gherkin like that says something so stupid, I just continue with the auction. The reality is they're there to try and upset the auction. Now, if that person continues and goes on with it, I'll let them know and I'll signal to one of the agents to start filming if it's not already being filmed, and I'll let them know that the auction is now being filmed and anything that you say, you know, may be used against you in any proceedings that my owner decides to take up. And then you see that person start bidding, you can clearly see that they weren't asking a question, they were making a statement. Yeah, so there's a difference. Are you asking a question or you want to make a statement?
Try and put their mates off
who's trying to bid against them. But I think that a good agent and a good auctioneer should know that if something like that could potentially erupt, if there is a genuine issue. And if there is a genuine issue and somebody needs a question answered, I'm more than happy to answer a question. But I'll actually go up to that bidder before the auction starts and I'll say, have you got any questions?
Mm.
And I'll give them the opportunity to ask me a question. Now, if I know that there's a potential disruptor there, I'll ask that of them, and they'll then say to them, well, I'm just letting you know that I'm giving you the option to ask me the question now. So if you ask me a question during the auction, I can only assume that you're disrupting the auction.
Mm.
And we're also letting you know that the auction will be filmed, and then that really puts puts a lid on it. They don't ask any questions.
Do you get intimidated by zeros? I mean, when we go back to the 23 million, was that just the same as doing a 2.3 million as doing a 700, or was there a few extra sort of ticks on the heart?
Oh, look, there's a few extra ticks on the heart with that one because I'm a little bit nervous. I knew it had potential to be Australian record. I don't often get nervous before auctions. I've definitely got nervous before that auction, and I get really nervous every time I'm about to do a block auction because I know that what happens in a mo- and you would have seen some auctions of mine, I'm quite fast.
Yeah.
I call the numbers quite quickly and I create a lot of urgency around forcing the bid from people. So
lifts the energy too. I mean, there's nothing worse than seeing an auctioneer that doesn't really... Oh, for me, it's brilliant as a buyer, but when I'm watching the show, if the auctioneer doesn't create that energy and that momentum, that's a thief of a good outcome. And sadly, good for your client. That never happens with you.
It's when you talk about the numbers and the zeros, you can't help but if the property is worth a lot more, feel a little bit of extra pressure on your shoulders. But at the end of the day, it's exactly that. It's just a number. And so long as you can call the number and add the numbers up correctly, you're going to be fine.
Now, I want to change pace a little. Obviously, you're in the market every week.
Yep.
We've come through a pretty incredible period inside the Sydney market over the last 4 or 5 years now. Are you seeing a change in the market up there at the moment?
There is no doubt that change is in the air. The mood of the buyers is changing. Does that mean that prices are going to correct substantially or much at all? I'm not convinced that it will. But you can definitely feel the mood change at the auction.
Yep.
And Saturday was actually a really good example of that. I had 11 auctions on Saturday, 8 of which that I actually had to conduct. And of those 8 auctions that I conducted, I only sold 2.
Okay.
And my first 4 auctions all passed in on a vendor's bid. And one of the auctions that didn't sell was a really nice house in Roselle. Great house. The owner bought the property, I think, for about $1,350,000 or circa that.
Yep.
They spent about $650,000 renovating it, and the agent was quoting $2.5 million during the campaign. There was a block of land that sold around the road for $1.9 million on Saturday. So we're right in the right price range. The agent was quoting 2.5 during the campaign. He increased the quote from 2.5 to $2.6 million. We got to auction day. We actually had a reserve. The owner was happy to sell the property around the $2.6 million mark. To be frank, if they were really pushed and a buyer had made a decent offer, they probably would sell it maybe for a fraction less. Who knows?
Yep.
I called for a bid. I had clear instructions to have a vendor's bid of $2.5 million prior to auction. I called for a bid. No one bid. I knew it was going to be a bit tough. It was a bit of the flavor of the day. I called for a further bid, no one bid, and then a buyer shouted out $2 million. And I said, we only had, we had 2 register bidders. If I had 10 register bidders, I'd take $2 million and I'd run.
Yeah.
But we had 2 register bidders, I knew it was going to be tough.
10 years late.
Right? And I said, can't accept your bid. I can't help you with this house, but how about we say 2.5? He says, no. And I said, well, we've been guiding everyone that they need to be 2.5, 2.6. It shouldn't be any hesitation around 2.5. He says no. Then the next lady then says, I'll give you 2.1. And I said, thank you, but it's just too far. I'm vendor bidding $2.5 million. Now you'll need to be above 2.5. Now, we ended up passing the property in. We passed the property in for 2.5 million. The lady at 2.1 turns around to the agent and says, well, I'm at 2.1. This is the market. Literally within 10 seconds, a buyer walks in the house and says, I've come down from the Hunter Valley. I hadn't had time to come and see the property. He said, you know, what would buy it? And Matt, the agent, says, well, 2.6 would buy it. And he says, I'll pay 2.6. Can you send me a contract? And Matt says, yep, I'll email you a contract. He says, I'll need my solicitor to look at the contract. Now, I could see the mood of that buyer, the buyer at 2.1, all of a sudden was like, there's competition,
right? Yeah, yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is Now, that was on Saturday. Today's Monday. I'm not sure what's happened since then. But I think that buyers need to be careful in a changing market to understand that it's okay to try and buy properties less, and that's the buyer's role. And I would be doing the same thing. But to do something that's just too offensively too low can actually work against you.
It's not going to correct that quickly.
No.
So if there is an attrition that we are going to come off the peak, which naturally there's a peak in every cycle, then you've got to be, you know, you don't get these bargains unless you're in a depressed market as opposed to just coming off the peak. So it's an interesting... So you are definitely seeing it out
there. We're seeing change. Look, the market's still really good. We're still averaging... On Saturday, we averaged 3 bidders at every auction. To put it into perspective, in our peak, we're averaging like 6 or 7 registered bidders at every auction.
And of those 3, owner-ox investors?
Yeah, good question. On that particular property was both owner-occupiers. On other properties, we're having less investors at the moment. Less investors for that type of house as well. More investors focused around the apartments, smaller terrace type homes, city fringe locations where investors are buying. There's still plenty of investors who are looking to purchase, but our monthly clearance rate last month was 74%, which is incredibly strong.
That's still a seller's market.
A normal auction market for us in Sydney is between 50 and 60%. That's a normal auction market.
Hey, just a quick change of pace for your own portfolio. You mentioned the goal for the 5-bedroom house.
Yep.
Can you remember the first property that you purchased and what was that like? And was it owner or investor?
Yeah, the first property we purchased was a house for myself and my wife. Interesting story around print advertising versus online advertising. That my almost mother-in-law, cut out a newspaper clipping and said, Damien, I think you and Peppy should go and have a look at this house. And it was a great little house, renovator, in a suburb called Narromburn in Sydney, which was a single-fronted, workers' cottage-style, lovely, character-filled home. And I said, great, I'll go and have a look at it. It didn't come up on my internet search, don't know why. But I saw it on the Thursday. We had a second inspection on the Friday. I got married on Saturday. We went on our honeymoon on the Sunday. So whilst we had our 4 or 5 days of honeymoon before, because I had to get back for auctions the next Saturday, we had four or
five. My wife wasn't impressed. Yeah. Pay the bills.
That's right.
Pay for the wedding.
We had 4 or 5 days of honeymoon, and then we came back, and we bought the property at auction on that following Saturday. So two things: I wouldn't have seen it unless it wasn't in the paper, and the second thing is if it wasn't an auction, I wouldn't have had that urgency placed on me to actually make a decision to buy. We categorically would have said, you know what, we're getting married, we're going on a honeymoon. If it's there when we get back, it's meant to be. And it probably wouldn't have been there when we got back.
That's right.
So it was our first place that I bought. Fortunately for us, my wife Peppy had already bought a property, and she was living in it at the time. It was a 2-bedroom apartment in a suburb called Lane Cove. And her diligence around saving and being able to buy that property originally was the catalyst for us being able to afford to buy our first home together. And that was the first home that we bought in Narromburn.
Nice. And building a portfolio of property outside of the family home?
Yeah. So we bought that property. We sold that property to get into our current family home. But whilst we owned that property, we bought other investment properties. And it's hard. You look at what you pay for property at the time and you think, how can this thing ever double in value? And I look back today,
damn, it doubled in value
to the properties that we bought, and I think to myself, I'm so glad that we bought when we did. And we now have 5 investment properties along with our principal place of residence. And we look back at that portfolio, and I'm a, you know, we've spoken about how you write goals and you achieve them, both personal, business, and life. And one of my life goals is to have $20 million of unencumbered assets that I can live off, our family can live off, for the rest of our lives. On a 5% return with $20 million of unencumbered assets, it's $1 million a year, which is a huge income. But if you can, whatever your number is, that's my number, whatever your number is, you set a number and work towards that goal and say, okay, well, if that's the end goal, what do I need to do today, next week, next year, over the next 5 years, 10 years to reach and achieve that goal? Now, that might be a combination of property and shares. I really use our property portfolio to say, okay, well, that's what it's worth today. And I've got spreadsheets from my accountant, who's an incredible young guy who's put these spreadsheets together for me, that I can now look at like a wealth tracker and say, well, this is what it's worth today. This is the interest rate I'm paying. This is how much rent the tenants are paying. And if you put normalized growth curve over what's happened in the last, 50 years, this is what it will be worth when I'm ready to start working less. I hate the word retire, but start working less.
Brilliant. Now, obviously, you've been able to watch the way in which property prices move.
Mm.
Is there any observations that you can make about what are the properties that outperform versus what are the properties that might just get the area growth as opposed to those emotional properties or those properties that perform well?
Yeah, good question. One of the reasons, going back one step to when I was working at Elders, my nan passed away and they had that hail storm, and she didn't die as a result of the hail storm. But as a result of the hail storm, they got new roof, new ceiling and things in a little cottage in Kensington. And I'll never forget the day that Dad, when they sold Nan's family, the family home, had a reserve of $750,000. And it sold at auction for $815,000. And you could not wipe the smile off my dad's face. And all the neighbours were saying, the buyer's a lunatic. I can't believe they paid so much. I'm selling those same houses now for $3 million. Exact same houses, like two doors down, identical. So I look at land value and I look at apartment values. I've always been a big believer in buying land rather than buying a unit or a whether it's strata title, community title, whatever it might be. I love land because there's no more land, right? Land's land. You can't get any more land, but you will be able to in time develop land more. The way that our population is growing and with the land that we currently have, particularly around major CBDs of Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, they're not producing any more land, but development controls will and should relax so that you can build up and properties will get smaller. And as properties build up and get smaller, they're not replacing the land. So the more land you own, the more growth it should have. Now, there is the other argument that says, well, you've got more land, you're paying more land tax. And that is absolutely something that you need to be mindful of, and you need to get a return off that land. So what properties outperform other properties? The properties that I see do really well at auction are properties that tick all the boxes. If I'm an investor, I want to look at, does it have the right aspect? Because natural light is an important factor. Does it have parking? Can the person get a car off street? Is parking important in the area that you're buying in? Yes, no. How many bedrooms is it? One bedroom, two bedroom? I'd rather buy a one or two bedroom unit opposed to a three bedroom unit.
Okay.
I think you get a better return off a one or two bedroom unit than you would off a three. I want to buy something that's got the right aspect, and I personally want to buy something that has parking so you can get a car off the street. So it's got to tick those investment boxes for me. I also want to be in a good street. I don't want to be on a busy road, and I want to be in a good growth suburb that has a good young communities coming to those to that suburb. So cosmopolitan style, great cafes, great restaurants. Does it have the beaches nearby? I would rather buy in an area that my yield is lower, but I have better capital growth, than buy something outside of a major capital city that has a huge yield, but maybe the growth could be questionable.
Sluggish. Yep. Brilliant.
Good stuff, Ben. We've flown away.
Look at the time.
Couple of quick rounding off ones. I think you might have touched on this. Who is your first mentor? Were they live or were they virtual?
Dr. Fred Gross has been my biggest mentor, and he is an incredible life coach, business coach. For me, Dr. Fred has taught me everything about goals. So he's been a great coach for me. John McGrath has been someone who I've looked up to my whole career. I worked at McGrath Estate Agents. I was fortunate enough to sit in the car with John as a novice auctioneer and go around and watch him auction. I love the way that he presented property, and he's a great leader in our industry. And I've got a lot of respect for a lot of other business people within the industry who have done great things. And, you know, from a personal point of view, I look up to my father-in-law, I look up to my dad, I look up to my own family, and I want to try and instill those same core values that I've learned from these other people on now onto my kids. And if I can do anything for my own family, it's passing on the things that I've learned from all of those mentors onto them so that they can achieve as well.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And any book recommendations? What's the must-read book?
Couple of must-read books. I love a book called Legacy. I think his name's James Kerr, who wrote that book, Legacy. It actually talks about the All Blacks. It talks about how he spoke at ARIC. And you know what? It was interesting. I read that book like 2 months before ARIC, and I didn't even know that he was speaking at ARIC. And I was so excited when he started speaking that he talked about how the All Blacks sweep the sheds.
Yeah.
I get really frustrated with people who think they're better than other people and people who think that they can't take the bins out or do this or do that. Like, it's the little things that actually make you better.
Yep.
And I never let anything get too above or below you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great book. I've just got given a book, which I'm really excited to read, which is called The 5 Second Rule. And The 5 Second Rule is all about decision-making. We all make decisions quickly. When you procrastinate on things, you won't achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like getting out of bed to exercise. It's harder to make the decision to get out of bed and do the exercise than it actually is to do the exercise itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the 5 second rule talks about how if you've got that 5 seconds to make the decision, am I not eating chocolate? You got 5 seconds. Are you going to pick that chocolate up and put it in your mouth, or you're not going to eat chocolate? I believe that things happen because you want them and make them happen. When you categorically decide you want something, you can have it. If you don't make the decision, and you got to say to yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice to achieve that goal? The reason why most people don't achieve their goals is because they're not willing to make the sacrifices to achieve those goals.
Correct.
Well said.
Two good books.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant books. And my last one for you as we wind it up, Ivers, I know you're panicking in terms of time, but you seem very humble but very accomplished. So what does success ultimately mean to you?
Success to me is about having a great family, building a wealth property portfolio, having a wealth strategy so that you can be comfortable when you're not working. Family's everything, absolutely everything. You know, we all get so caught up in real estate, business, and all this stuff. At the end of the day, and Dr. Fred taught me this, you're dead a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're at your funeral and you sit around, you're looking around, who's at your funeral, who actually cares about you, and who do you care about? So your family is really important. Make sure that you work hard for your family. Make sure that you spend time with your family. But you've also got to have the other side where you actually set yourself up for your future. That's what success means to me. I like catching up with my friends. Yeah, I'm humble. I enjoy life, absolutely. My fitness and my health. I've done 2 Ironmans, multiple marathons. To me, that keeps me sharp. To me, that keeps me switched on. I'm always about who are you helping. So I like to think I'm quite philanthropic, where I give money to a lot of charities. I sit on committees for Youth Off the Streets. I do a lot with the Children's Cancer Institute, Barnardo's, lots of different charitable organisations. I do copious amounts of charity auctions. But I do that because I want to. I don't do it because I want to get something out of it. I do it, and I had this conversation with an auctioneer the other day. Do it because you want to do it, not because you want to get something out of it. Don't sponsor the local nippers because you want your brand on the back of the shirt. So if someone's thinking about selling their house, they're going to use you. Do it because you actually care about them learning to swim and wanting to get better in life.
Help enough people get what they want, Ben. You get everything you want in life, which is a very, very good thing. Well, I think that's, mate, that's been terrific. We had a bit of everything there.
Fantastic. Brilliant.
Mindset, some goals, some insights into the auction industry. Yeah.
No prep, just bang. That's why he's a leader.
Straight off the set of the block. So, mate, we appreciate you coming in. I think there's going to be a huge amount of value for our listeners on that, Ben. And
I might even listen to this one again.
You will not.
I will.
You will not.
I just don't listen to us two.
No, it's actually worth re-listening to, Ben. I always listen back for QA, so I'll...
Very good.
I'll guarantee that you get something out of it. Hey, my life hack today is very simple. Have you ever loaned someone a book, you know, one of these books that you've got, and then you sort of think to yourself,
Where'd that book go?
Where'd that book go? Who did I lend? So my life hack today is quite simple, Ben. I lend you the book. I'm going to take a photo of you with the book. And then I'm going to
put it on Evernote.
Evernote. You knew that was coming, but it doesn't have to be Evernote. Because I spoke to Andrew about this last night. She goes, oh, it doesn't have to be Evernote, does it? Have you spoken about Evernote on the podcast? She asked me. I said, well, only in a big way. Only in a big way. So that's my life hack for the listeners out there today. If you are going to lend someone a book, a DVD, a CD, cash, take a photo so that you can remember it. Because we often forget, who do I actually send that book to? So there you go. There's one for you, mate.
Very good. Love it.
Did you know?
Did you know? Got a couple.
Yeah.
A couple around the globe today.
Come on.
So the first one, we're going to Scotland. Now, when you go to Scotland, do you know sometimes that the houses have the front door painted red?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why they paint their front door red?
I do, so I won't give it away.
The reason why they paint the front door red is because they've paid off their mortgage. That's how they're letting people know in the street that they're actually debt free. Yeah.
My door would be blue.
Yeah, what colour's deep, dark debt? Deep, dark debt colour of blue.
That could be a good leading indicator for property investors to see how the wealth of the actual street. That's implemented in Australia.
This person here doesn't have any problems with debt, so he's not going to sell for distress of a debt. The other one, what's that tall building in Dubai called, Bryce?
The Burj Khalifa.
Mm. Did you know that you can actually watch two sunsets when you're in Dubai? At the bottom of the Burj Khalifa, you can sit there and watch the sun go down. Then you can take the lift 163 floors higher, and you can actually get 828 metres. Guess what? You can watch the sunset all over again,
mate,
in the same city.
There we go. So any listeners who are thinking of that romantic date, have a champagne down the bottom.
You can see the sunset going over the sand dunes. Well, then just lift up the 828 metres. There it is again. Mate, let's get this the second time.
Skip Paris. You've just opened up a new market.
Did you know?
Dubai. So there you go. Well, again, thanks again for joining us, Damien. It's been a pleasure to have you on. And Ben, until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
I was actually wondering if you could hear that. All right, folks, until next week, we'll see you later.
See you later.